Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Vayera. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Vayera. There is a handout for this podcast, which I'll send as the next podcast episode, so please print it out if you can and use it to follow along with Rabbi Schweiger. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha is Parshat Vayera. In our parsha, the redemption of the Jewish people goes into high gear. We are told of 7 of the 10 plagues. Today I would like to examine the beginning of the parasha, chapter 6, verses 2 through 8, which can be titled the redemption speech. Before we look at these verses, let us recap what was at the end of last week's parasha. In chapter 5, Moshe and Aharon make their initial appearance before Pharaoh, demanding the release of the Jewish people. And Pharaoh's response is to significantly increase the workload. The Jewish people have to fulfill the same number of bricks that they were always doing, despite the fact that Pharaoh no longer provides them with straw to make the bricks. From the perspective of the leadership of the Jewish people, the policemen who are to enforce the production of these bricks, Moshe's encounter with Pharaoh was a total disaster. And at the very end of last week's parsha, Moshe comes before God and says, "What have you done? Instead of saving the Jewish people, you have increased their servitude. Did I not tell you from the very beginning that I am not the person to do this?" And the very last verse in last week's parsha, God says to Moshe, "Now you will see how I will take the Jewish people out with an outstretched arm." As a follow-up to that verse, God then proceeds to give Moshe the redemption speech, the beginning of our parsha, which basically outlines in detail the process of the redemption of the Jewish people, the process of the transition from slavery to freedom. I have attached a sheet taken from Nechama Leibowitz's book, Studies on the Parsha, which outlines this parsha and shows the chiastic structure. For those of you who are not familiar with the terminology, how this section is built in a beautiful literary pattern, ABC, CBA. And I would like to examine the different elements of the structure, which also reflect the significant content. So let us begin, and if you have the sheets in front of you, the section begins, "And God spoke to Moses and said to him, I am the Lord." And when you look at the very end, the last words of the section are, "I am the Lord." And if you look smack in the middle, "Say therefore to the children of Israel, I am the Lord. I am the Lord," or as it is in the Hebrew, "Ani Adonai," is at the essence, the core of the redemption process. The opening verse is fascinating because when we read it in the Hebrew, it says, "Vayidaber Elohim el Moshe vayomer elav ani Adonai." Elohim spoke to Moshe and says to him, "I am Adonai." And then in the continuation, "Va'era el Avraham el Yitzchak ve'el Yaakov be'el Shaddai." I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob by the name El Shaddai, which is translated here, God Almighty. Ushmi Adonai, but my name Adonai, lo nodati lahem, was not made known to them. In these two verses, we are presented with three different names of God, Elohim, El Shaddai, Adonai. And I have spoken about this in other contexts, in other podcasts, but let me review. Each of the names of God reflects a different aspect of God. And in fact, the appearance of these three names here is extremely important, not only to this section, but to the whole book of Exodus. The name Elohim is a generic name for God. It is the name of God that appears in the beginning of Genesis. It is the name of God that is central to chapter 1, the whole creation story. In the rabbinic understanding, the name Elohim reflects God as God is manifested in nature, reflects a God of law as reflected in the laws of nature. And I might also add, reflects what we might call a hidden God. Elohim is the same name of God, which appears throughout the Tanakh, throughout the Bible, when speaking of idolatry. The nations of the world relate to Elohim. The understanding of God, which they have, is through the natural world. Elohim is connected with the word El, which means power. Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, in his commentary, connects it with the word Ela, which means these. And if I now conflate these two points, Elohim is a God that is reflected in the natural forces, natural phenomena of the world. The sun, the moon, the stars, the sea, the wind, earthquakes, thunder, lightning. They're concrete elements that we can somehow point to and say, these are God. They're God because they have power. And hence in the pagan world, they were worshipped. That is one aspect of God. A God that is reflected in nature. A God is reflected through the laws of nature. But it is a hidden God, because it is very easy to say that is nature, and not to say that is God. In verse 3, God says, I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob by the name El Shaddai. El, similar to Elohim, power. But what is Shaddai? There is a very interesting discussion among the commentaries of what is the root. Rashi in chapter 17 in Genesis, based on a rabbinic midrash, says Shaddai means Shaddai, I have sufficiency, meaning I am able to provide. Other commentaries in a similar vein say Shaddai is related to the word Shaddayim, which means breasts, a nurturing God. The Ibn Ezra and Nachmanides tend to look at Shaddai as related to the word Shodeid, the one who is almighty, who is overpowering, and take it to mean the God who is able to overpower the natural order. Why is this the name of God that appeared to the patriarchs? Nachmanides, in that same verse, in chapter 17, verse 1 in Exodus, says and repeats that in a number of other places throughout the Chumash. This is the name of God who interacted with the Avot, who basically overpowered the natural order to have it respond to the actions of the Avot. It is the name of God where God now has nature correlate to the behavior of people. Or to put this in slightly different words, we say in the second paragraph of the Shema, if you will do the mitzvot, you will get rain in its proper time. But if you don't, God will withhold the rain. This is El Shaddai. This is a God who has the natural order respond to our behavior, who nurtures us through nature, who has the sufficiency to provide for all of our needs. And that is the God that the patriarchs experienced. In another podcast, I mentioned how Isaac, in chapter 26 of Bereishit, Isaac plants during a time of famine, produces a hundredfold. Why? Because God blessed him. God had nature respond to him personally. This is a God who provides for us, who relates to us, but does it through the natural order. And again, this is a God who in some ways could be seen as a hidden God, because what we see is nature. It is true that nature is responsive to us, but we don't see anything which is out of the ordinary. And now I come to the third name of God, the four-letter name of God, the Tetragrammaton, Adonai. This is the name of God that reflects a supernatural God, a God which is completely beyond the natural order. It is a God that is totally revealed in the sense that there is no way that one could explain, understand, connect with what happened, other than saying, this is Adonai. This is not anything which I can somehow put in the normal terminology that I use. This is the name of God, which is about to go into high gear. This is the name of God, which will be dominant in everything that will happen in the redemption process. This will be the name of God, which will bring the 10 plagues, split the Red Sea, be revealed at Sinai, and whose glory will then be seen in the construction of the tabernacle. The opening verse of our parsha, chapter 6, verse 2, reflects a significant change which is about to happen. The Jews are now going from a reality where God has been absent and, if at all present, very much hidden in the background, to a God who will be in your face. And this is perhaps the most significant message which God is now giving to Moshe and which Moshe is transmitting to the Jewish people. What is about to happen now is a revolution. The Jews will now experience the supernatural God, will experience God in all of God's glory. And this will be the God who will take them out of the slavery of Egypt to their freedom. They will experience a God that no one else has experienced up to this point, even the patriarchs. That is my first point. But now let's move on in terms of the speech. The first half of the speech, verses 3, 4, 5, presents us with history. In verse 3, God says, I appeared to the patriarchs by this name, El Shaddai. I was not known to them by the name Hashem. And I also establish a covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land of their dwelling. They did not settle in the land of Canaan. Compare that verse, as you see on the sheet, with what appears just before the end, when God says, and I will bring you to the land, okay, concerning which I swore to the, with an uplifted hand, to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I will give it to you as a heritage. So that if you look at this chiastic structure, in verse 4, we're talking about the past. I made an oath to the patriarchs. I made an oath to them when they were dwelling in the land, that eventually I would give it to them. But now is the time when I am about to actualize that oath. And I will bring you to that land, which for them was a promise, for them was a dream, for you it will be a reality. And not only that, but I will give it to you as a heritage. A heritage meaning permanence. Not only will you settle down there, but this is something that you will then hand on from one generation to the next. Note the contrast between the past and the vision of the future. Then when you have in verse 5, and I have also heard the groaning of the Jewish people in Egypt, how they are being afflicted. And as you see in the attached sheet, this is put in juxtaposition with what God says earlier. I am the Lord your God who releases you from the burdens of Egypt. Right now, you are groaning. You are being weighed down. You are experiencing the full depths of the servitude. But you will come to a point where that will be behind you, where you will understand and appreciate a process of how I took you out from underneath the burdens of Egypt. So I think it's very important for us to see how the opening verses are describing the past, present, and how the later verses are now pointing to the future, which is in sharp contrast. Now you are groaning, but you will come to a point where that will be history. I made a promise. I established a covenant with the patriarchs, but you will actualize it. They dwelled in the land. You will have it as a heritage. You will not only settle down, but you will hand that to your children. And now I want to get to verses 6, 7, and 8, which is outlining the process of redemption. If I mentioned earlier that the key phrase in this speech is Ani Hashem, Ani Adonai, I am the supernatural, visible God who will bring about a revolution. Within the revolution, there is an evolutionary process. And that is reflected in what is generally known as the four languages of redemption, four languages that in fact are five. The Jewish people will not be swept out of Egypt in a moment and brought into the land of Israel. But the process of going from slavery to freedom will be in stages, so that what's orchestrating the process is a revolution. In its essence, it's a revolution. But in fact, the way it will happen will be in an evolutionary, step-by-step process. We know that very often, revolutions easily reverse themselves. People who go from one extreme to the other extreme very often can revert back to where they began. If a revolution is going to be sustained, there needs to be a progressive, gradual process to sustain it. What are these 4/5 stages of the process? In verse 6, it is reflected by the opening words, as you can see. V'hotzeiti, I will take you out from under the burdens of Egypt. V'hitzalti etchem, I will save you from their service. V'ga'alti, which is the third language, I will deliver you. V'lakachti etchem, and I will take you. And then the last one is V'heveti etchem, and I will bring you. Let me examine this in more detail. What is the first stage? V'hotzeiti etchem mitachat sivlot, I will take you out from under the burdens of Egypt. There is a classic commentary, the Sforno, Italian, 1500s, who tries to identify each of these stages with a particular event. The first stage he identifies with the beginning of the plagues. Everyone knows the first plague being the plague of blood. What happened at that point? The Sforno says, at that point, the Egyptians stopped, for all intents and purposes, in their subjugation of the Jews. The Jews were no longer doing their backbreaking labor. And that is the meaning of, I will take you out from under the burdens of Egypt. The burdens that are weighing you down, the labor which is crushing, you will now have a respite. And according to the Sforno, the moment the plagues began, the Jews were no longer engaged in their difficult chores. Although the Jewish people are no longer working hard, nevertheless, they are still slaves, because they are still under the jurisdiction, under the hand of Pharaoh. They do not have the freedom of mobility to go wherever they want. And that leads us to the next stage. V'hitzalti etchem me'avodatam. I will save you from, or deliver you from their bondage. What it means is I will save you from their service. According to the Sforno, the next milestone is the last plague / the Exodus. After the last plague, Pharaoh gives the Jewish people permission to leave Egypt. Not only do they give them permission, they push them to go out. The moment the Jewish people leave Egypt, that is when they have removed the yoke, the shackles of their servitude. Their ability to move begins the process of them being a free people. What is the next stage? And I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. According to the Sforno, the next milestone, the splitting of the sea. There are two significant elements to the splitting of the Red Sea. The first, at the Red Sea, Pharaoh and his army drown. What this marks is the complete liberation from Pharaoh. Even when the Jews leave Egypt, there still is that threat which hovers over them. A threat that, in fact, was terrifying when the Jews saw the Egyptian army and Pharaoh at their head chasing after them. But once Pharaoh and his army drown in the sea, the Jews know that they no longer have to fear Egypt. They know that they have finally been released from the yoke of Egypt. But there is another element, and this cuts to the core of what do we mean by going from slavery to freedom. Freedom is not just being liberated from the yoke of Pharaoh. For the Jewish people, freedom means entering into a relationship with God. In fact, there's a certain irony over here, as we will discuss in more detail in a moment, that in fact the Jewish people go from being the servants of Pharaoh to being the servants of God. So what do we mean when we say that the Jewish people are being redeemed? What do we mean when we say they're being liberated, that they're being free? They're simply substituting one master for another. But I think that there is a very profound difference, which cuts to the core of what freedom is. I would like to say that freedom is being in a state which allows me to actualize my full potential as a human being, to actualize my human majesty, my human dignity. When the Jewish people are working for Pharaoh, Pharaoh is not looking to enhance their human dignity. If anything, Pharaoh is trying to dehumanize them. Pharaoh is trying to bring them to a point where they are subhumans. The more that he brings them down, the more that he is raising himself up. When God is now bringing the Jewish people into a relationship with him, the thrust of that relationship is to lift up the Jewish people, to enable them to actualize their greatness. At the splitting of the Red Sea, the Jewish people are beginning to enter into a relationship, a significant relationship, with God and also with Moses. As it says at the Red Sea, Vayaminu b'Hashem uv'Moshe avdo. They believed in God and Moses' servant. That faith in God and in Moses is what enabled the Jewish people to do the impossible. God tells Moses, tell the Jewish people to walk into the sea. It's only after they walk into the sea that God splits it. It's that walking in the sea which is the beginning of the path to their destiny. A destiny which has many challenges, many obstacles, which many times seems overwhelming. And the Jewish people are able to rise to the occasion. But then there is the fourth step. The fourth step is, and I will take you to me to be my people, and I will be your God. What is the next milestone? Sinai. That is when the Jewish people enter into a covenantal relationship with God. That's where they accept upon themselves the law system which they were given, a legal system whose purpose is to make us into a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. In a certain way, the moment we come to Sinai, we have created a certain closure. Because if you look at the end of the verse, it says, And you shall know that I am the Lord your God who released you from the burdens of Egypt. At Sinai, the Jewish people can now look back and see how from the beginning of the plagues, they were basically being led to eventually come to Sinai. And theoretically, one could say that it's at Sinai that we have really made the transition from slavery to freedom, from being the servants of God, the servants of Pharaoh, to the servants of God. But there's a fifth language. The fifth language is, and I will bring you to the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The fifth language is ultimately the goal. But the fifth was actually not realized by that generation. When the Jewish people came out of Egypt, crossed the sea, entered into a covenantal relationship at Sinai, that generation ultimately died in the desert. It was a new generation that came into the land. And although that new generation settled in the land, eventually they were exiled twice from the land. The fifth language of redemption is looking towards what we might call the messianic era, to a time when the Jewish people will enter the land, never to leave it. The fifth language of redemption is looking to a reality when the Jewish people will perhaps actualize the relationship that was established originally with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, of experiencing God on a day-to-day level in a natural way, looking to a reality when the natural world will be nurturing and will be providing, because the Jewish people are behaving the way they need to, that the Jewish people have perhaps brought the world back to a primordial reality of the Garden of Eden, to a reality where people and nature are in harmony with each other. That is the glorious vision that is now being presented. What I didn't write down on the sheet is the next verse. Moshe then goes to the Jewish people and presents them with that vision. And the text says, "V'lo shamu el Moshe," they did not listen to Moshe, "mikotze ruach," from shortness of spirit, "ume avoda kasha," and from harsh labor. From that verse, we can see how the Jewish people have bottomed out, how the Jewish people have become so dehumanized, have become so debilitated that they go through the motions of living, but have lost hope, have lost their ability to react, to hear in any way. And perhaps that is the reason why it is essential that they now experience what we might call shock treatment, why they experience a revolution before their eyes to perhaps bring them back to life. and immediately afterwards, Moses begins the process of negotiating with Pharaoh. But this time, there are no setbacks. This time, everything is happening in a very, very progressive, sequential way, ultimately to bring about the redemption, deliverance of the Jewish people. The four languages of redemption are so significant that at the Seder night, we have four cups of wine to mark them. We have four cups of wine as a way of thanking God, acknowledging God for each stage, and perhaps trying to somehow appreciate the meaning of each stage. We have a fifth cup at the Seder, which we don't drink, the cup of Elijah, which is sitting on the table, waiting to be drunk, waiting for the next stage, for the Jewish people to come back to the land of Israel, to actualize their destiny as a kingdom of priests and a holy people, to create a new world order, which allows for the presence of God to spread throughout the world, which allows for a harmony between people and between nature. Perhaps this speech is something that we always need to keep before our eyes, to always remind us of what it means to be a slave and what it means to be free, and what perhaps we need to do to still make that movement towards freedom. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.